Hi, I'm Michael Sunoff, founder and CEO of HardToFindSeminars.com. For the last 5 years, I've interviewed the world's best business and marketing minds. Along the way, I've created a successful publishing business all from home from my two-car garage. When my first child was born, he was very sick, and it was then that I knew I had to have a business that I could operate from home. Now my challenge is to build the world's largest free resource for online downloadable MP3 audio business interviews. I knew I needed a site that contained strategies, solutions, and inside angles to help you live better, to save and make more money, to stay healthier, and to get more out of life. I've learned a lot in the last 5 years, and today I'm going to show you the skills you need to survive.
Most people are focused on the today. Most people aren't long-term thinkers, and they aren't able to map out how the future is going to unfold and how they'd like it to unfold. The marketers that do kind of map it out and plan things out and make some odds based on testing in the past. The marketers that do all that, just the testing and create their own map of the future, they're the ones that excel.
Get into it. Now, you told me you've made a couple million dollars, sold a couple million dollars worth of stuff, and you've done it all through the internet?
Mm-hmm. I made all my money. I paid cash for my first house. I paid cash for two cars. So I'm one of the guys that, you know, you hear these guys talking about all the stuff that they bought and their spam mails. And I'm one of the guys that actually proves it with bank statements that's necessary in my account. I tell people that I deal with, my prospects and customers, I truly am living that internet dream.
Where are you located?
I'm in Redding, California.
And how old are you?
32 now.
32. Are you married?
Yep.
You have kids?
I just got married about 2 weeks ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So you don't have kids yet?
Actually, we kind of put the cart before the horse.
You got one coming.
Yeah, well, we had one actually beforehand. We decided to try before we bought in marriage. So, yeah, a little bit, 2000, but it works.
Yeah, how old is your child?
10 months.
10 months? Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
You got a little boy?
A little girl.
Little girl, okay.
Yeah.
Well, my youngest one is 15 months now.
Oh, actually, yeah, I read and I heard a little bit of your story.
Tell me, how did you get started in all this? What were you doing before the internet? You're 32. How long have you been doing the internet stuff?
I really dug in deep in early 96, late 95.
How did this whole thing start? How did you get involved with the internet?
One of the first things when I first plugged in my computer, my first experiences was getting spammed right away in my email box, an AOL box, I think it was. And it was someone selling information on how to make money using your computer and part-time and all that. And I just right away dug into that, and they wrote a piece of compelling sales material. And I just was fascinated with the whole concept, and I could see what their angle and what they were getting at.
Do you remember who it was?
No, I don't remember the exact name. I mean, I've literally purchased more than 100 or maybe into the area of 200 different money-making systems, courses, programs, whatever, you name it. So I can't remember the exact name of it. But it was inspiring enough to make me see how easily I could duplicate that and create. It was basically just a person doing the classic deal where they tell you about this great business, hype it all up with some really good sizzle, and then pretty much tell you to do the same thing. Hey, sell other people how easy it is to sell information on into like a niche product or a niche market. I pretty much just started doing that. I started finding little niche markets and creating little niche products and moving them out. Mostly my favorite niche, though, has always been the business opportunity seekers, because I'm one of them, so I know what they like and I can relate to them.
When you first started with it, did you have a job at the time?
I was kind of rebelling. I couldn't handle having a boss. That's one of my weaknesses that I say in life, is that I just can't take orders and I can't handle being bossed around or having a boss. At that time when I was first getting started back in whatever, late 95, early 96, I was pretty much just, I'd get a job and then I'd just quit it, you know, walk off and usually go home and think around on the computer and just struggle and say, somehow I'm going to make my money on this computer.
What's the longest job you ever had?
I'd say the longest would be probably a year for Circuit City, selling computers.
So you've had an interest in computers for a while.
Yeah. Actually, it's kind of funny. Back then, I actually didn't know much about them when I was selling them. I was really good at selling them just because I understand the principles of sales. But my real interesting computers kicked on once I bought my first computer after that Circuit City job.
Did you buy into other biz op stuff when you were a kid, like younger, you know, 13, 14, 15, offline business opportunity stuff?
I don't think that young, but I was doing stuff that was, I think anyone looking back at my life would say they saw it coming, what I'd be doing today. Because I used to do little crazy things like, you know, those little x-ray glasses and all those little novelty things they had in the back of, like, Boys Life magazine. Well, I used to be obsessed with the fact that these guys are advertising, and I'm just kind of realizing right now at this moment how kind of weird it is looking back. Interesting that I was so fascinated on these companies and who these guys were and where they even worked out of. I used to think of it, and I loved ordering their little products, these little gadgets and these magic tricks and the soap that turned black or whatever it was, the hearing aid, or the x-ray glasses, and I was just so into that stuff as a kid, and I figured every kid had to be into this stuff, and I just thought, these guys are the greatest guys in the world. They're my heroes. And they'd have catalogs, and I used to order those catalogs from these companies. And then one of the things I would do that probably, like I said, would show that I might be headed in this direction was I would block out prices in the catalogs, and I would Xerox them and have my own prices over those. And so
okay.
I would make orders at school, and I would pass those little catalogs around, and the kids would get all excited and be like, oh, I want one of those, you know. And I had the company address and everything blocked off.
That's awesome.
Isn't that funny? I just remembered that right now, too. I haven't thought about that since you just asked, you know, about stuff as a kid. And it's true. There was something telling me anyway. I would have all these kids say, I want that, and they would ask me even, and I feel kind of bad because it's actually kind of a greedy thing to do in a way, but it's just business, though, really.
That's right.
They would want to know, you know, who is this company or whatever, and I'd say, oh, you know, you got to go through me.
That's great.
Like Mini Trump, I guess. I don't know. I said, you got to deal with me for this. And probably some kids would go off and maybe just say, oh, I remember seeing some of that in Boys Life or whatever, but a lot of people go with the flow and just say, oh, there's, you know, I'll take an order. And so I'd collect all these orders, and I had little order forms I made up and things, and I would kind of be like the Avon person in the little kid world.
Really? Do you remember how long you did that for?
Oh, it wasn't long. It was just a little thing I thought was kind of cutesy to do to see if it would work. I don't think I was even trying to make money back then. It was more just I wanted to appear like an adult, you know, like I was doing something adult. I would say I probably didn't do that for more than a month or something. I mean, it was a quick little thing I did a few times. I think, honestly, what happened is I got in trouble. The teachers obviously don't like you marketing products in their classroom.
Right, Ryan. I'm sure it had an impact on you to see that, God, this was easy. All I did was, you know, take a catalog, copy it, block off where it came from, and the prices, put my own pricing, and that was just like easy money.
Yep.
It probably gave you the bug.
Yeah, it probably did. You know, like I said, I started working for these other jobs later on in life. I attended a few Zig Ziglar seminars and things, and I would hear this saying, you know, over and over, you know, that when you're working for someone else, you're working for someone else's dream in life. I kind of always had that in the back of my mind that at any job I was at, I was always picturing, who is the guy collecting all the money? Who's the top, top, top dog that is in the best position here, who's making the most money? And I just always thought, I am working for his dream. I'm making his dreams come true. His or her, let's be politically correct here. I had this really desperate desire to cut out the middleman and to not work for someone else's dream, and so that's why I think I started buying Entrepreneur magazine and just really studying what it is these guys have in common that do make it happen for themselves. And
right. Okay. When you first started getting all the spam, when you first got your computer and you were getting all these, you said, well, you started doing what they were doing and selling stuff to little niches. Be specific. Give me one or two different things that you did when you first started making money online.
The first thing I ever wrote was a little guide. I don't even remember exactly what I called it, but it would just basically taught you how to write. I just thought it was so fascinating, the fact that you could sell paper and ink. The fact that there was the same thing you might throw in your trash that was 10 pages long of a sales letter that you might get in the mail as trash if it's a sales letter, and if it's done wrong, it just gets tossed in the garbage can. But yet, that same, I'd seen where I had purchased courses from people or money-making systems where that same 10 pages just had different ink on it, where I was paying $14.95 or $19.95 for that 10 pages of paper and ink. And yet, this is treasure now. I can't wait for it to come. It's so exciting. It's on the way. That whole thing, this is going to be the big one. And that when I get it, I'm still, you know, even though it's just at literally 10 Xerox pages, paper and ink stapled together and stuff in envelope, I'm not even disappointed when I get it. Normally, a book fetches at least, you know, $15 or $20. And here I'm paying 15 or 20 and just getting some Xerox black and white paper. And I'm excited still, and I'm reading it, and I'm just thinking, this is so cool going through the whole thing. And this one, it kind of taught you to do the same thing, that you can just sell paper and ink. And that's kind of what I was just teaching people. And my product, again, was just a 10-page little report or information package of kind of like what I had received, that just teaches you how easy, if you know anything and have any special skill or just any hobby that you're really focused on, how easy it would be to write something to help others. And I'd seen that seem to be the common denominator in kind of get-rich-quick schemes and marketing systems, money-making systems. It seemed to be that everybody was saying, create information products and focus them to niche groups of people. So I thought, why is everyone saying this if it doesn't work? So that's why I kind of tested it out for myself to see if you can indeed make money by just creating little paper and ink products and selling them or marketing them to niche groups.
How did you market it to a niche group? Give me an idea. Like, well, the one on how to make money, was everything you were doing all online or any offline marketing?
Yeah, I didn't do any offline marketing. It was pretty much 100% marketing through mostly search. And back then, in what, early 96, you didn't have to pay for any search engine listing. I don't know, you probably remember the times, the good old days.
Right.
Where, I mean, I would be number one on Yahoo under something huge like online business, make money, or work at home. And I would be number one listed on Yahoo. The other big ones at the time were, you know, like AltaVista, Lycos, Hotbot. And they were all separate. And they weren't all sharing the same search results. And I would be number one, or at least, you know, in the top five across all these major search engines, and not paying a dime for that advertising at the time. I don't even know if it's useful to hardly discuss that these days, because I don't think anyone's ever going to see that happen again. Anomaly.
So you had learned how to get at the top of these search engines?
I don't even remember trying. It just seemed like...
Back then it just happened.
Yeah, it just seemed like I lucked out. Or I wasn't sure if it was luck or there was skill. You know, some people would try to say they were... like I would try to say I had a special knack for it or something, but when I think about it, the only thing I remember doing was making my web pages very dense in keywords, which is nowadays is common practice. And in fact, search engines actually, I guess now, are penalizing people for doing them too dense in your keywords of choice. But that's the only thing I can think of, that I was very aware that the search engine robots were coming to look and to see how many instances of the word that, you know, has to do with your product was on your website.
So when someone came to your website and they clicked on that number one ranking and they went to your website, what did they see? Basically a sales letter about what you were selling?
Yeah, basically it was just something I just sat down, and I hadn't really studied too heavily at that point, yet I was just kind of using any natural instincts I might have had, just kind of thinking, what are people looking for? You know, I just really took a look at and thought to myself, what, you know, I know about people at that young age of like around 18 or 19, you know, like what are the pains in life and what are the biggest frustrations and what do people want most as far as making money? And I just looked at myself as what I would want to hear, and I kind of wrote to myself. And I think that's its own unique ability, if you can write and while you're writing know how others are already going to be reading it and what if they're going to think it sounds fake or made up or too good to be true. And I would write some, I think, really good copy. Even looking back at it now, it looks better than what I would expect from a beginner 18 or 19 year old. I remember my very first headline, I don't know it exact, but it was very close to, find out the secret to making $2,750 part-time from your home computer. That headline, in conjunction with all those search engine listings, ended up selling me close to 10,000 of those little information packets I was selling, what I called my book or my course.
10,000 of them.
Mm-hmm.
That was a headline that showed up on the search engines, and then people would click on it, then it had your copy, and then how much would you sell that little information for?
$14.95 for each and every one of them.
Wow. How were people paying? Did you have a shopping cart set up?
That's the funny thing, is that I was so beginner back then. Like, I thought taking credit cards was just way beyond me and too big of a thing. That's like something real companies did, and I was just like this kid working at home. And so I would have made a lot more money if I had known better. But just simply said at the bottom of my webpage, just said to get your copy right away, send a check or money order payable to, first I just used my name, and then later I set up a company name.
So you sold 10,000 of those. You must have been in heaven.
Well, yeah, at that age, especially after having my parents tell me that, hey, look, you need to get like your brother. You're sitting around here at home. You should be moving out. You should be doing something with your life. My brother went to college. He got a 5-year business degree, and he always was just that guy that was on the right course. And everyone was always concerned about me, like, you know, what's Jason going to do? I was bordering on dysfunction, I think. And I was sitting around, and my dad would just, you know, he'd get all ticked off and just, get out there and get into school, or you're not going to sit around here anymore. And I told him one day, you know, what I was working on, and he was telling me, like, to come out and rake leaves or something. And I was trying to tell him, I got something real big here I'm trying to do right now, and I think it's more important than raking the leaves. And he just thought that that was my little persuasive tactics of avoiding raking the leaves, but I truly was working on some stuff that, as you're hearing, was pretty big for a guy my age. And so that day, he, even with my trying to get around it, I had to rake the leaves. Later on, I did tell him what happened is the check started coming in. You know, the check started coming in. It wasn't credit card. It was all check and money order, and some people even would stuff cash in an envelope.
And they were coming to the house?
And they were coming to the house, and I was out. And they were opening the mail, and that's when, it was just a couple weeks after my dad was yelling at me about raking the leaves and sitting around, and that, you know, why didn't I get like my brother and not be so lazy and all this stuff. They started seeing all these foreign currencies. we're getting orders from literally a guy ordered in from a village in Africa that ended up calling me, because I even put my phone number on stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I have my own phone line. And he called, said I'm on a payphone at an outskirts of an African village. I just cannot believe that a guy like this is ordering this. All this weird money is coming in, and so it wasn't just American. It was like my parents weren't just seeing that I was getting successful and that something actually worked here, but they were seeing that this is, I mean, for the first time they've probably ever seen, this is like something seriously global.
That is hilarious.
They well knew that even though they thought I was just off in my own little la-la land, my own world, they knew that I believed in my own mind and in what I was doing and that I liked to help people, and that they always said that I was the whiz kid. And so it was just, I guess, a little shocking, but it was mostly just incredible thing was for me is that to have them finally not look at me as a joke. It's kind of like that line, show me the money.
Exactly.
The only thing that could have done what it did for me and to make it now, instead of all my parents' friends asking, what's poor Jason doing? You know, he's still depressed. I had, like, depression back then. It's like, you know, what's he going to do? I was fighting with the parents and everything, and so it went from them kind of having to always explain to their friends and still clinging at the house and not doing anything and kind of being dysfunctional. It went from them having to explain that, which they hated, from that to telling their friends, literally calling them up, saying, or I would just hear in the background when they were on the phone, be like, saying little details about how much money I'm making and how successful I've become. And that was the most satisfying thing I could probably ever experience in life.
You know, you always want to please your mom and dad.
Exactly. But that was the single most satisfying time in life. And even these days, like as I become more successful, nothing really comes close to those beginning moments. It was such a strong contrast to disrespected and my parents having to make excuses for my odd behavior and stuff to actually bragging about me. They actually bought me a plaque that I still have. It's sitting right on my desk, and it's just a son, I'm so proud of you, and it's a little gold plaque. It's got kind of like a picture frame deal.
Mm-hmm.
But it's probably not expensive or anything, but it's just the fact that they took the time to go out and get something like that. Yeah, it's one of the best things in life.
You know, I'm proud of you are some of the most important words you could ever say to your kids, and I always tell my 4.5-year-old, the little one's still too young, but I always tell them how proud I am of them, because so few people hear it when they're growing up.
Yeah, exactly.
Another note, people will work for recognition harder than they will for money.
That's very true, too.
And that's a perfect example. So that's great. So you started making some serious money doing that. Was this just with that specific report, with that headline you read me?
It evolved. That was the very first one, but I would go on to write more. And keep in mind, I would literally print these things off at Kinko's. I mean, I would just go down the street and print them off, literally product on demand type deal. That was one of the buzzwords I was hearing, you know, got to get into products on demand. And it worked. And in answer to your question, was that the main product? It kept getting bigger, and I added to it, and that's the beauty of product on demand. I would add a few more pages, and then the next time someone ordered, that person would get the totally up-to-date version. So it's another thing I liked, is that you're not having some old stale product sitting around. Like I bought some things from other marketers that I could just tell was, I think they wrote it once a long time ago, and then they just decided that that's their product for life, and it's like never going to be changed. Well, I think the beauty of once the computers got bigger and everything, and everyone got used to how easy it is just to make a revision on a disc and bring it down to Kinko's, my information that I was selling was almost like a newsletter or something, and it's so fresh. And that's what I think kept people actually coming back and customers coming back for more, which surprised me too. At first, when I created the thing, I think a lot of people tend to doubt how worthy your information is. And so I was thinking, you know, maybe this isn't great. Maybe I'm going to get refunds or something. But it was like the opposite. It was another satisfaction came in just seeing that someone that bought it, not only did they not call me up and say, this was horrible, they did just the opposite. They said, do you have anything else? You know, and they wanted more. And that's a great feeling, too, when you need to come up with more info products to satisfy your past customers.
At that time, did you understand the concept of back-end and marginal net worth?
I've heard the terms a whole lot. I think the name back-end and cross-marketing and targeting, a lot of these things just took a long time to really sink in. I don't think it was probably till even a couple years ago where I really fully understood what those words meant, ending in cross-marketing and targeting and things. And that's when I started using them, and I'd find out that there's no end to this marketing stuff. That's why even I think most of the greats don't proclaim themselves like, I am done, I am a genius, I am the ultimate marketer. They're always studying, too, because there's no end to what you can learn. And you were saying earlier, I mean, you tend to find it just never ends. Become a sponge for more great tips and secrets and concepts.
I agree. Take me more into the progression. You had sold 10,000 of those little books. Then how did your business progress from there?
I began at that point. I started recommending certain software programs in my marketing materials or in my little course that I was selling.
Mm-hmm.
I started making certain recommendations for people, and I realized that they would ask me for more specifics on how they get in touch with the person to buy them these products and these things that I liked. You know, I realized, you know, there's a little money there, too. I mean, that I could develop contracts with these people instead of just referring everybody over and missing out on that. I quickly saw that I could contact these companies, and I guess done when I was a little kid with the little magic books, I could become kind of my own little reseller for these things. So I started to contact these various companies, and especially the ones that I liked. I didn't want to just recommend products that I didn't feel were truly great. I wanted to only recommend the best stuff. And if a company that had the very best product didn't need, you know, resellers or declined to accept me as a distributor, I would still recommend it. It wasn't like I was going to go sell something or recommend something just for money. But a lot of them ended up wanting to work with me, and I told them what I was doing and that I had a little book and that I recommend a lot of things. A lot of people trust my decisions and look to me for advice. And so I ended up making all these little deals. And throughout the book, I would tell people how to order those things through me. They did.
Give me some ideas of some of the stuff you were recommending and making money on.
Like website submission software, HTML builder stuff that, you know, would help people that don't know how to build websites very easily. That's a complex, pretty complex issue for a lot of people, and so I quickly saw that the beginners out there, they want something that can put a professional-looking website together on their own PC and just kind of drag and drop and just point and click. So I would find programs that did just that, and that's something I would recommend. Usually the ones that I was using, that's what I tend to do. Even to this day, I tell people to get what I'm using. Usually in most cases, I spend way too much time at the computer, and I try everything in a given market or a whole product line. I'll try them all, and then I'm big into reviewing. A couple of my sites, what I do is just review things, and so that's partly why I get this following of people that look to me for what's the best.
And what kind of money could you make off those? Like, what would some of that software cost?
I mean, they all varied. I guess if you had an average piece of software that I would recommend would retail out at $79 or $99, that's what it would cost the customer.
You could make maybe half of that, 50%?
On a good one, all these companies are different. You know, there's some real greedy ones that would only give you 10%.
Mm-hmm.
If it was a great product, I would still go ahead and do that because I figure, well, you're getting a great product, and I'm still getting something. But, yeah, some of them are real generous, and I still have deals with some of them today that pay 50%. I've never gotten more than 50%, I don't believe, but, yeah, 50% is real nice when they do that for you.
Okay, that's great. I mean, this is a great story. So you sell the 10,000 little booklets of the information product. You've built their trust. You've delivered because they've gotten their product. They're happy with it. They come back, and they look at you as, you know, as a mentor and as a consultant. And if they're serious about what they're reading in that, they're going to want to do more, and they're going to need tools to do it.
Good.
And you refer them to the tools. You make a little bit on some, more on others. How else were you able to generate income off of a new customer?
Later on, it evolved to where I learned a lot more how to do that. But back then, I'd say that was one of my weaknesses, was that I was just kind of done. like I said, I didn't fully understand back-ending and cross-marketing and all this stuff back then, and upselling. And so I would tend to sell them once, and especially after they bought maybe a couple programs and software that I was recommending in my original book, that'd be it. I wouldn't really do much. Now I did kind of feel like I was missing the boat there, that I should be. I would always hear people say, you know, that your list is gold, your list of past customers is gold, and that was something that I always felt like I was neglecting, you know, that list, and I was wasting money. So that would later turn into something that I really focused on. I'm almost kind of anal retentive about my list of customers these days. It's like I feel like really got to, you know, baby that list and really nurture them and take care of them and be in good contact with them, because that's something I never used to do. I used to just, bam, make the sale, and it was like, if they wanted help, I would help them, but I wouldn't follow up enough, I don't think, try to keep an ongoing relationship back then and sell more products.
Well, let's talk about that, you know, because that's something I'm actually guilty of, too, in some aspects. I have a lot of series of autoresponders where I keep in touch, but I always feel like I need to be keeping in touch a little bit more. And Gary Halbert, he teaches that most people who think that they're communicating with their list enough probably isn't.
Right.
And that's really important for anyone who has a list. Before, you felt like you were neglecting them. Tell me some of the differences that you found when you made that change from when you were more like neglecting them to where you really started babying them, taking care of them. Did you see
how you made the change, or what?
How you made the change, and what changes did you see? What results did you see from making that change?
Well, to start out in making that change, I subscribed to a number of internet marketing newsletters and business newsletters, and it started getting ingrained in me through reading over and over that, I mean, that was a big common denominator, that you better be following up. I guess it was an article that I originally read that talked about the cost of your advertising, and it was an article that was talking about how you can afford to advertise or spend a lot more on advertising if you know how much you're going to get out of the customer long term, how much that customer's worth. And that I was basically saying, if you're only getting a customer, or contacting a customer once and going for that one sale, you can't really afford to spend much in advertising. And it was this article that it really hit me that, yeah, I mean, if you're just selling a product for $100, that truly means you better not be spending much more than, at least you shouldn't be spending more than $50 to get them. I mean, am I right? And so I just made sense that, boy, it was talking about how over the long haul, if you knew that customer was going to be worth, you know, maybe $5,000, how much could you afford to advertise to get them? And so then I started getting into email software, looking into programs that I could plug everybody into, you know, like had a database that I could merge their first name. I'm real big into that I believe most emails get deleted because they don't contain the recipient's first name in it.
Mm-hmm.
So I found a couple of different programs that would easily allow me to put in all my customers and to send them, you know, follow-ups, even kind of by hand doing it. It wasn't really as good as autoresponders in some ways. There's pros and cons. In other ways, it was maybe a little better. It's just something that I like, the hands-on approach, and having a program that allowed me to, at the click of a button, contact all my customers and have their first name in the subject line. That was important to me, and it worked.
Can you share that software, what you use?
There's been a couple of them. One of my favorites is actually a program called Infacta Group Mail. You may have heard of that one.
How's it spelled?
Infacta.
Infacta.
Uh-huh.
Infacta Mail.
Infacta. They call it Group Mail. It's by the company Infacta. And another one of my favorites is Postmaster.
And they're real easy to use?
Oh, yeah. If you're accustomed to using autoresponders, you might find them easier. I think it's just what you get started with. In my case, I'm a software junkie. I love software. And so I've never gotten into autoresponders yet. I have marketing friends that autoresponders are all they use, and they look at what I do as not the way to go. I think it's just what you got your start in. But
right, exactly.
Yeah, but that's what I like best, and I recommend it to all my students, because it's something that I can teach and I can relate to a little bit better, and we can talk about managing a list or how to load in a list easier. With autoresponders, some of them don't allow you to load in your list of customers.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of think that encourages like spam, and so they kind of limit you, or they make a lot of rules. I find a lot of autoresponders set up rules where you have to do double opt-in, meaning everybody has to receive a confirmation email and agree to accept your mail, which is to me a lot of hoops and hurdles. And
yeah, I didn't know that, but I imagine that's probably true. I use a pretty good autoresponder I'm pretty happy with called Reply to It, REPLY2IT.com, and you don't have to do that double opt-in.
Oh, really? Okay. Cause, yeah, a couple of the big ones I've heard that GetResponse and AWeber,
mm-hmm.
pretty much both going into the whole thing where it's got to be double opt-in, and I've seen some of my friends get away from that for that reason. Some of them still, they think that's a good thing. That's just a whole other debate and story of whether double opt-in is a good thing or a bad thing. I think ultimately it's going to cost any marketer money doing double opt-in, but there's these people that are just so into helping fight the war against spam that they think that's a good thing. That's fine to each his own.
Well, Reply to It is $29 a month, and you get unlimited autoresponders. I had 5 or 6 different autoresponders with AWeber, and it was quite expensive.
Well, that's the thing about software I like, too. I guess I've never really liked the idea of ongoing fees. I like the idea of software you buy it once, and that's it. You don't have to pay anyone anymore. Granted, you pay a little bit more up front, but I just like owning things. I've never been a leaser or a renter.
No, I don't blame you. Okay.
I started going down this software route and learning to really get into lists and learning all the terms of the whole email marketing aspect and learning how to not spam. And I had to learn that there's a very fine line there, that sometimes even when you're marketing completely legitimate and in a very responsible manner, you still get accused of spamming. It's like there's people that they forget that they contacted you or that they were on your website. And so I had to learn how to finesse that and how to be sure to not be considered a spammer. Anyway, once I kind of mastered it all and learned all the rules of how that all works in the email marketing world, it really did help out. What it did is, I was used to paying postage, and after you've had a past history of paying postage to keep in touch with your past customers and things, it's really just amazing when you really think about what email does for you. I mean, I still get excited when I think about the fact that it's basically free for me to zip out an email right now to the 70,000 customers of the past I have. I mean, a lot of those email addresses are probably no longer valid, bounce, but in fact, they do bounce, some of them, so that's why I shouldn't say they might. Some of them do, but out of that 70,000, I probably have about 40,000 that are all good.
And think what it would cost you at 50 cents a piece. That's $20,000.
Well, right, and the fact that I could contact them twice in a day. Like, if I make a mistake, you probably know, if you make a mistake with paper and ink, and it turns into, whatever, a $10,000 or $20,000 mistake.
Exactly.
Whereas I can make a mistake, and it's just such a nice thing that I can just make a quick little notation and hit the whole list again and say, oops, sorry about that. You'll notice that I misspoke when I said such and such, and it's just no big deal. And, yeah, it's just that whole new knowledge about how powerful email marketing is and how to do it right and to avoid the whole spam issue, it changed everything. I mean, it's definitely at least doubled my income. I'd say that's the end result of the whole thing is that I now tell people, if you're not following up an email regularly and trying to do back-ending and cross-marketing from different, if you have different niches, I mean, you are just throwing away dollars. I mean, and you're wasting your advertising dollars. People often ask me how I can afford to buy such expensive advertising. Sometimes I buy some really spendy ads. I'll put an ad in a magazine these days that might cost $2,000 for, it's not even a quarter-page ad, and people say, how do you do that? Well, it's all about that I know I can get a lot of long-term income or cash out of these customers of mine. I can continually keep new products coming out to them, and it pays for it.
You know what a customer's worth over the lifetime.
That's what I'm trying to say.
And that's what Jay Abraham teaches. Learn the lifetime value of what a customer's worth. Instead of generating customers, if you know you can make $2,000 on a customer over the lifetime you have them, you could spend up to $1,000 or $1,500. Anything less than $2,000, with certainty, because of testing, that you're going to come out ahead by the time those 2 years are up.
Well, yeah, it's neat because people will look at you, and like I said, with your ads, if you're following those J. Abraham principles, it's funny to watch, people that just are blown away. They think you're an idiot or something. They don't realize that maybe they're the idiot. You might know something there. That to me, that's just, it's very satisfying to be able to pay more for advertising than most of my competition. I look at them and they just can't keep up with that, and it's just because they just don't know that.
They just don't know. They have no clue.
Yeah, they really are. Most people, I notice, are focused on the today. I mean, it's just the nature of people that you're focused on what's going on today, and most people aren't long-term thinkers, and they aren't able to map out a map of how the future is going to unfold and how they'd like it to unfold. And the marketers that do kind of map it out and plan things out and make some odds, what the odds are that things are going to unfold, and based on testing in the past, the marketers that do all that, the testing and kind of create their own map of the future, they're the ones that excel.
Right. Well, listen, this is the end of part one. Please continue to part two.
Here is another bonus I want you to know about, extremely valuable. If you go to another site of mine called Executive Audio Institute, that's executiveaudioinstitute.com, all together, no slashes, you will see a site with nothing but all my audio recordings, all in downloadable MP3 form. Now, these are the same recordings that I have on hardtofindseminars.com in the audio clip section, except I will offer you the reprint rights to all of these audio recordings. In other words, I'm going to hand them to you on a silver platter. If you have a website and you need something that generates traffic, I will set up a custom site for you, and you can send your visitors to my collection of audio recordings as a bonus. You have here thousands of dollars worth of audio content on some of the best interviews on the internet. You have hundreds of transcripts that you can print out and share with your customers. I'm not going to charge you a dime for it. I'll even build you a custom site. All you have to do is put a small deposit down, but it's refundable once you introduce it to your list. Go on over to executiveaudioinstitute.com and read the first part. You'll see a link. If you want the reprint rights to these audios, it'll explain everything there. I think you're going to find this extremely valuable. It has taken me years and years to build up this collection, to get them all edited, to put the transcript. I've invested tens of thousands of dollars in this collection, and I want you to have it. Go check it out, executiveaudioinstitute.com.